is August the 13th, 2015. I am Steve Gerwick of www.gerweck.net. Gerwick.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news and information since 1997. Welcome to the latest edition of the Gerwick Report podcast, the GRP, the podcast that tells it like it is. Quickly, let me tag in my longtime tag team partner, Frank D.
Hey, what's going on out there, Steve? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. We got a lot of issues to discuss today, but none probably as big or as pressing as the interview we did last week because, boy, Frank, the feedback we received on that Virgil interview was quite a bit overall. The volume of messages we received through emails and voicemails and Facebook messages, tweets I received on Twitter there as well. A lot of people had some strong opinions about the interview. Some people really liked it, really enjoyed it. In fact, some encouraged Frank to do a weekly show with Virgil. Some people really did not like it. I remember one person said that was the first GRP he didn't listen to the entire episode, which, by the way, if you listen to all the other episodes, all the different podcasts that we've done, we really do appreciate that very much. But it definitely sparked a lot of emotion from the wrestling fans out there. Some people could not believe the outlandish things that Virgil was saying. Some people were asking me, you know, was he being serious? Was he just kind of working us? What was going on there? I don't know really what to tell people on it. I think he believes a lot of the things that he said on the podcast. I think he really believes that he should be in the Hall of Fame, which I guess that should be what you strive for. You have been in this business as long as Virgil has been. He had his WrestleMania moment, WrestleMania 7, as you talked about with him on the podcast. But, I mean, as far as the Hall of Fame, of course not. I mean, neither one of us believe that Virgil should be in the Hall of Fame. He made some other outlandish comments about, he was supposed to be the hand-picked leader of the New World Order by Ted Turner himself. You know, Frank, I emailed him several times in setting up this interview, and a couple of times I couldn't do it, a couple of times he couldn't do it, but we kept email exchanges, and as far as I was concerned, because he kept getting back to me, he really wanted to do the interview. And if you look at, go on to YouTube and the other wrestling websites, Virgil doesn't do a lot of interviews. So for him to choose us after contacting him, because I'm sure he does get a lot of interview requests, saying a lot of the things that he says on Twitter there. But he kept getting back to me, so I thought he really wanted to say something. He really wanted to do the interview, so I was very excited, and I was really hoping that it would be something a little bit different. And I'll say this, Frank, about it. Had I known it would turn out the way it did, I wouldn't have done the interview, but at the end of the day, it's one of those notches for us under our belts. We had the Million Dollar Man on earlier this year, and I'm glad that we at least had a chance to talk to Virgil himself.
Exactly. You know, it was one of those things where we kind of knew ahead of time what we wanted to talk about with Virgil as far as his career goes, but when we actually started the interview and saw where it was going to go, I mean, it was just like it blew my mind. You know, it's like I had to quickly adapt to the situation because, in my opinion, the interview really turned ghetto fabulous. That's pretty much what it was. And Virgil didn't want to stay on the topic of his wrestling career. He wanted to go into other things. He wanted to talk about, you know, these 17 females he was with the night before, or talking about, you know, being a leader of the NWO. And he completely was stayed over any kind of questions that we would ask him. And it was just like, I'm not knocking Virgil. I appreciate him coming on the GRP and giving us his time. But at the same time, it's like, that's not what we do here on GRP. That wasn't the level of what we do. We try to provide great content in a professional manner, and those are one of those times where I don't think that we did that.
No, definitely not up to Gerwick.net standards as well. We've done a lot of interviews on Gerwick.net over the years with top wrestling superstars, as we do right here on the Gerwick Report podcast. And I also want to say, I want to thank Virgil for doing the interview. As I said, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I actually was doing some little research, as I always do for interviews, and trying to look back at what he said in previous interviews, and he doesn't really do a lot of interviews. So I thought, okay, this is something cool. I'm always, when somebody doesn't do a lot of interviews, and I reach out to them, and they say, yeah, I'll do your show, I mean, it feels like a pat on the back that maybe we're doing something right here on the Gerwick Report podcast as part of the Gerwick.net website. And I was honored that he would come on this particular podcast, the GRP here. I knew by judging his Twitter feed that he says a lot of things that's going to get him in trouble. And I think he says a lot of things to get attention or draw attention to himself. And that's fine to a certain degree. But I really thought in discussing the format for this interview, and he wanted to know the questions up front. And I said, you know, that's not how we roll here on GRP. We don't give you the questions up front. In fact, Frank, we've lost out on a couple opportunities, some really big names in the business that wanted all the questions in advance. And that's just not how we do things here at the GRP and Gerwick.net as well. I want a spontaneous sounding interview. I don't want, how did you get your start in the wrestling business? You know, standard answer. What is your favorite match? Standard answer. I want something a little bit different. And we got a lot. We definitely got something different there in the Virgil interview. But I want to make clear that we don't allow the talent to know the questions in advance. In Virgil's case, he said, you know, what do you want to discuss? So I said, let's talk about Million Dollar Man. Let's talk about your WWF run. Let's talk about WCW, the NWO, West Texas Rednecks, etc. And he was fine with that. And then the day we were going to do the interview, he sends me the list of things that he wants to discuss, which some of them were wrestling related. And I said, okay, that's fine. Like, he wanted to talk about the Young Bucks, and he's very big on the Young Bucks, which I am too. I'm big fans of their work. So we threw that into our list of questions. But I had really hoped, Frank, that we could talk about, you know, WWF and his thoughts on being the Million Dollar Man's sidekick, and then go into the NWO and to be Curly Bill and to adopt a different ring name in WCW. And I don't know, Frank, that's not the road he wanted to go down. And I think if you go back and listen to that interview, we just did the best we could with the interview.
Right. I mean, we had to basically salvage what we could out of the situation. I mean, there was lots of things that I wanted to know about his career, questions that I've had. I mean, some stuff he answered, some stuff he didn't want to get into. And if you remember, Steve asked some questions about Ted DiBiase, and Virgil kind of, you know, just went over that. And I kind of, you know, if you listen to previous editions of the GRP, it relates to the interview we did with Ted DiBiase. Those two are not very cool these days, so I think that had a lot to do with it. But
In fact, you know, Frank, you usually ask a subject.
Right.
Is there anything you don't want to talk about? And he brought up Ted DiBiase, and I just felt like, you know, I respect that you don't really want to talk about him. And if you listen to the question I asked, I said, I know you don't want to go down this road very far, but I don't know how I could do an interview with Virgil and not ask him about the Million Dollar Man. Just like I don't think I could do an interview with the Million Dollar Man and not ask him about Virgil. They kind of go hand in hand in the history of wrestling. So I had to throw it in. I know that's not the road he wanted to go down to, but if we don't ask that question, people are going to say, why didn't you ask him about the Million Dollar Man?
Right. The same thing, it sounded like when we did the interview with Eric Bischoff, it's kind of like people would say, well, how come you guys didn't ask him this? How come you guys didn't ask him that? How come you guys didn't ask him anything about TNA? Well, it's because, like Steve just said, I usually ask the talent ahead of time if there's anything that they don't want to talk about. Virgil was cool with talking about anything, but he didn't really want to talk about Ted DiBiase. Bischoff didn't really want to talk about TNA. We know why now. He didn't want to talk about TNA. But nonetheless, that's what's up with it.
And to make one thing crystal clear, because this has come up a lot of times on social media and through messages that we received, we did not pay for the interview.
Right.
And I know it's common that if you run into Virgil, if he bumps into you and he signs anything, he's going to charge you some money. He did not charge us a dime for that interview, and he probably would have went longer with us had we wanted to. I remember at one point Frank just saying, do you have any more questions for Virgil? And I said no, because this just wasn't the interview I'm accustomed to. If he would have talked legitimately about his WWF run and breaking into the business and how he got to WCW and the offer he would have got from Ted Turner or Eric Bischoff to jump to WCW, I would definitely had some more questions for him. But that type of interview where he just mainly wanted to talk about his male genitalia and to, you know, give him money to become a millionaire through the GoFund campaign, that's not really the road I went down to. But we did what we could with the interview, and I, you know, Frank really kind of took it over. And at one point, I just said to Frank, I don't know, maybe I should just leave this interview. you know, because, you know, you guys are going down a different road than I'm used to being on. But, you know, at the end of the day, Frank, I'm glad we did it, because we can say that we talked to Virgil. We can say we talked to Million Dollar Man in the same year. All those podcasts are available at Gerwick.net, as well on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on iTunes, etc. So, you know, if it's not your cup of tea, and believe me, there's a lot of things that, you know, looking back, I'm not real proud of that particular discussion. But at the end of the day, we got Virgil on this podcast, and it is another notch under our belt.
Exactly, and that's what I can do. I can add it to the resume of many other people that I've talked to, like, you know, Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, Teddy Long, Matt Hardy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, Virgil doesn't do many interviews, so it was cool to have Virgil on here, but we just wish it would have went a different way.
Absolutely, and I was just talking to Frank before we started this podcast. Something I just want to say, if I knew Virgil would have done that on that particular podcast, that particular interview, had I known that going into the interview, I wouldn't have done the interview. And, you know, I was talking to Frank about this. Like I said, I'm glad we did the interview. I'm glad I can say, you know, for this year and for the history of the GRP, we talked to Virgil and we talked to Million Dollar Man. I don't know how many podcasts out there can actually make that claim, especially considering Virgil doesn't do a lot of interviews. But I'm happy we did it, and you can check it out. And I have no problems, Frank, if somebody says, I don't want to listen to this, or this, I'm not comfortable listening to this, because, you know, everybody's different. And if it's not your cup of tea, I understand that. And to the one guy who said, you know, I've listened to every other podcast you've done except this one, then I salute that guy.
Right.
I don't remember the guy's name on the GRP Facebook page, but I definitely do appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate any type of feedback that we can get, whether it's good or bad. You know what? It is what it is. I mean, we take that, we learn from it, and we go from there.
Absolutely. And you can ask us questions. Something we did on the last podcast that got, you know, some people were talking, that's really cool. They kind of have a Q&A session. In fact, I was thinking back to the GRP, or actually it would have been the Girl Group Report hotline back in 2004, 2005. One of our main staples was we would just take a caller voicemail, because it was a hotline. It was a voicemail system. People would just leave us messages, and I would dig through those messages, and Frank and I would come on, would have been a hotline at that time, a phone line for people to call in, and we would just tackle as many comments. I mean, sometimes it wasn't questions, it was just comments. You know, I think about this storyline, or how I feel about this character, or why don't they do this, or here's something that can improve this storyline, or, you know, why don't they sign this guy? So it's not always questions-based, but we would come on and do a hotline report and just really comment on what you were commenting on. And I know, Frank, you've got an email address set up just for people to leave us questions.
Absolutely. And that's the GerwickReport@gmail.com is the place to go. You can leave us any type of question, and we'll do our best to answer here on the GRP. And you can also hit us up on the Facebook group. It's a closed group, but you can check us out on Facebook.com. Just type in Gerwick Report Podcast. It'll come up. You send a friend request to the group. I'll check out your page, make sure you're legit, make sure you ain't a spam bot wanting to sell sunglasses and all that type of shit, and everything checks out, you're cool, you'll be in a group, and interact with Frank D, interact with Steve, interact with a lot of other group members. We got a lot of cool people in our group, so check it out today.
As well, go ahead and plug the YouTube page, because I know we're getting more subscribers, and we want to also thank TV Tracks for putting a lot of our Virgil clips out there as well.
Absolutely, guys. Send a special shout-out to TV Tracks. Tracks has done a phenomenal job with helping the Gerwick Report podcast grow, and we really appreciate that. Check it out today, TV Tracks on YouTube. Also, youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast. Like and subscribe. We really appreciate that. You know, just keep supporting the podcast and telling people about the podcast, and whether you like us or you don't like us, you know, at least, you know, you give us a listen.
And, you know, we had a format for this podcast, and we're doing this podcast, and the story breaks about China and what happened at the memorial service for Rowdy Roddy Piper in Portland. Various reports out there, but I guess what has gotten a lot of people's attention, some of the comments made by Sean Waltman, and essentially what happened, I guess, was China went to the service and cornered Triple H and wanted to apologize for everything that she's done, because, as we've known, Frank, she's been really campaigning to get into the WWE Hall of Fame, which is kind of interesting, because here you have Virgil. I think he's really campaigning for the the WWE Hall of Fame. And I don't know if some of the things he does, some of the antics he does on social media and his new catchphrase on Twitter there, and I don't know if that's going to help him necessarily with the Hall of Fame, but it seems like Virgil wants to be in the Hall of Fame. China wants to be in the Hall of Fame. She's tried to reach out to WWE, Vince McMahon, Triple H, unsuccessfully in the past, and she found a new forum to basically get the attention of Triple H. She wanted to apologize for everything. And, of course, Sean Waltman definitely took exception to that. So, you know, basically it's not the place and time. You know, you go to the memorial service for Roddy Piper to remember Roddy Piper. If something's afterwards, a reception or whatever, that's different. You guys are just general chatting. That's one thing. But it seems like if you read what Sean Waltman is saying here, she took the opportunity, knowing that Triple H would be there at the memorial service, to corner him, finally get his attention, to apologize, and maybe get on better terms with Triple H and the WWE.
If she's trying to get on better terms with the WWE, this is a wrong, wrong way to go about doing that, especially when you have come out and basically slandered and defamed Triple H. I mean, you have talked so much crap about this guy, and all of a sudden now you're coming up to the funeral, and supposedly she's just, you know, apologizing to Trips. And it's kind of like, I thought you were the victim in this. You just went on some show where you were on there with Sean Waltman, and you were talking about how Triple H did this, Triple H did that, Waltman did this, Waltman did that, but yet you're apologizing? I think China's one delusional bitch, and that's just how I was thinking about that. And you just don't go to somebody's funeral, a legend like Roddy Piper, and pull something like this, if she did it. I mean, right now, we don't know if she did it or not. That's the word. But still, you just don't do things like that.
Yeah, originally, I believe you put the term, she crashed the funeral.
Right.
And then later, another tweet, he said that he had learned that she was invited to the event. So maybe saying that she crashed the event is not the right term. In fact, he actually apologized for using the term crash in one of the Twitters, or actually one of his tweets through Twitter. But he still calls her actions pathetic, that she would corner Triple H at this particular time to say everything, you know, that she was sorry for everything. These people that want to be in the Hall of Fame, and I go back to Virgil as well, I'm going to tie him in here as well. I just don't know if saying the things that you're saying, using these catchphrases, going on GoFundMe.com and say, you know, I want to be a millionaire, so give me money. I don't think those are the types of behaviors that's going to elevate your chances of entering the WWE Hall of Fame. Virgil, if we can just kind of talk about Virgil here for a second, I don't think his type of run in WWF really promotes himself enough to be able to be inducted in the Hall of Fame. Now, I know we'll talk about Coco Beware, and we'll talk about some of the other people that are in the WWE Hall of Fame, but you know, he certainly wants to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm just not sure if you can look at his career and, you know, basically being the sidekick, having a little bit of a run on his own there for a time. Going to WCW was basically the watered-down NWO version he was a part of. Then he did the group with Curt Hennig.
There's only one thing that I hate, because it's a bunch of crap. I hate rap. Rap is crap. Rap is crap.
But this whole body of work doesn't really, I don't know if he has enough on his resume necessarily, Frank, to warrant the WWF Hall of Fame or WWE Hall of Fame. But, you know, again, if you say, you know, Coco Beware is in, you know, why not Virgil? But I just don't think if you look at his whole body of work, in fact, we ran the poll at Gerwick.net. Would you vote for, or do you think Virgil should be in the Hall of Fame? 74% say no. So I would think, Frank, as we progressed through time here, his chances of getting into the Hall of Fame are pretty nil.
Well, I mean, they're pretty slim, but at the same time, you got to remember something. The WWE is running out of people to put in the Hall of Fame. So that might be a way to get Virgil in there. I mean, it you know, we keep going back to the go-to guy, and that being Coco Beware. And the fact of the matter is that Coco Beware had a career long before he ever got to the World Wrestling Federation, and it was successful. So on that merit, that's why Coco goes in. I don't really see anything as far as Virgil, you know, and I want to make it clear right now, the other podcast that we did with the interview with Virgil, I was talking about him going to the Hall of Fame. Well, that was just all bullshit because it was just entertainment. It was just going along with the interview. I just don't feel that Virgil did anything in his career that would merit a Hall of Fame induction. I mean, Virgil had one successful run, and it wasn't really a big run. It was just, you know, a few months of him working with Ted DiBiase, and then after that, it was done. I mean, he was down to jobbing to nails at SummerSlam 92. So I don't really see anything that warrants a Hall of Fame induction. I mean, the man had his run in the WWF. He then went on to the American Wrestling Federation, then to WCW. And in WCW, he was pretty much nothing but a lackey for NWO. I mean, the guy went to the West Texas Rednecks as Curly Bill. He came back in 2010 with Ted DiBiase Jr., pretty much reprising his role as the bodyguard slash lackey. And I just don't really see that as, you know, Hall of Fame. But at the same token, the Hall of Fame doesn't mean shit in the first place. So Virgil could get in.
Yeah. What does the WWE Hall of Fame really mean? I guess to some, it's the last accomplishment you're going to have. It's the, you finally get the pat on the back. Say, okay, you've been in the business for how long? Because let's face it, we got the Observer Hall of Fame. We've got my Hall of Fame. There's a Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa. I mean, there's various Hall of Fames out there, but certainly the most notable is the WWE Hall of Fame. They have the big stage. It's part of WrestleMania weekend. You get to go up there, make your speech, you get your paycheck, you get your plaque, or you get your ring, whatever it is now. But I still think back to somebody like Paul Orndorff. He got those honors. Rightfully so. He definitely had a Hall of Fame career. But what did it mean? He got a dinner. He got a paycheck. He got a plaque. And I think, Frank, if I remember in his case, he left a plaque in the hotel room. That's how much it meant to him. So in the whole scheme of things, really, what does the Hall of Fame really mean? We're seeing guys like Abdullah the Butcher sell his ring. I mean, if you really think about it, really, what does the WWF Hall of Fame really represent? It's a Hall of Fame based on if Vince McMahon or the powers that be at WWE corporate decide, yeah, we liked him. He's pretty cool. We're on pretty good terms with him. Let's put him in. You're in. And if you're not, well, screw you. You're out.
Yeah, I mean, the Hall of Fame means nothing. I mean, Paul Orndorff left his plaque. Abdullah Butcher is selling his ring. Paul Bearer's family sold his ring. It doesn't mean anything, people. It's just one of those things where the WWE uses it to make money. It doesn't mean nothing. So Virgil can get in. I believe that. I believe that at some point Virgil will get in. It's really only a matter of time because, like I said, they've run out of people to put in, and they're running out. I mean, they got a last, you know, a few of the big names left. I mean, you know, Lex Luger, you know, Rick Rude, Owen Hart, but
British Bulldog,
British Bulldog, Boss Man. I don't think Slick's in the Hall of Fame, is he?
I don't believe he is. No.
So you can put in Slick, but they're running out of people. So Virgil might get in just because of those reasons. It's because they're running out of people. But do I think he had a Hall of Fame career? Absolutely not.
No. In fact, if I said nil, I'd probably go back to what you say, slim. Right now I would say slim, but as you were saying, over the course of time, as we go further into the future, year by year, more people get in. As Frank said, you're really running out of headline acts. Rick Rude is a Hall of Famer. Owen Hart, British Bulldog, some of the names you just mentioned there. But once you get beyond those names, I mean, you're going to need secondary-type talent to be put in the Hall of Fame. And maybe at some point he does get that call. I just don't think, really, Frank, and maybe you disagree with me, but going on Twitter and saying some of the things that he's saying and using his new catchphrase, which you guys got into the last podcast. In fact, he basically comes on this podcast and opens up with it. So I go right there and say, you know, what do you mean by that?
Right.
But I just don't think that type of behavior – in this PG era where, I mean, as soon as anything came out about Hulk Hogan using the N-word, you know, he was just written off the websites, merchandise, everything. The NWO stuff was gone. I just don't think acting like he's acting and using some of the terms that he's using and just going berserk on social media is going to help his chances of ultimately get into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Well, you know what? I just posed this the other night on the Facebook group about the Iron Sheik. You know, Iron Sheik is a WWE Hall of Famer, and he said a lot of outlandish things over the years, too. I mean, the guy was using all kind of homophobic slurs and racial slurs, and yet I brought up the point that Iron Sheik still has this WWE contract. Is that fair? And say a guy like Hogan just pretty much, you know, let go and written out. And I'm like, it's a lot of politics. It's a lot of double standards going on here with the situation, in my opinion. I really don't think that it's going to hurt Virgil very much. I just think that it's because of just how high-profile Hogan is the reason why things went the way they did for him. But I don't think so. I really don't think WWE is really paying attention to Virgil, to be honest with you.
It's interesting because I listened to the conference call they did with the second quarter financials, and they're definitely going more with social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc., Instagram. They put all kinds of pictures and images on Instagram, but they're definitely pushing the social media more. And I just wonder how conscious they are of other people's social media, like a Virgil, like a Tammy Lynn Sitch. We've gone back to her a few times as well, but I mean, she goes on Skype, and you can pay to see her take her clothes off. And I will say, right here, with Tammy Lynn Sitch and Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan, etc., to me, Frank, if you put somebody in the Hall of Fame, they belong in the Hall of Fame. You don't take them out. And I know a lot of people are saying, is Hulk Hogan going to be taken out? Are they going to take Tammy Lynn Sitch out, etc.? To me, Frank, once you're in any Hall of Fame, you remain in the Hall of Fame. You're in the Hall of Fame based on what you did in that particular genre, that industry, baseball, football, basketball, wrestling, whatever it is. To me, once you're in, you're in. I don't think anybody should be taken out.
No, they shouldn't be taken out. Hulk Hogan shouldn't be taken out. Hulk Hogan is one of the reasons why WWE got as big as it did today. So you shouldn't take him out. You shouldn't take out Tammy Sitch either, because you know what? WWE was probably well aware of the fact of what Tammy Sitch was doing before she got inducted. It's not, you know, anything new. She was doing Wrestling Vixens with Missy Hyatt back in the day. So, I mean, she's done this type of behavior already. It doesn't matter. So you don't just go taking people out of Hall of Fame because of what they do. You know, you discover they did, you know, 5, 10 years later. It doesn't matter.
I agree. And I guess some people, going back to Waltman and China, some people are taking this story with a grain of salt because the source is Sean Waltman. And, of course, we've already seen that Sean Waltman has kind of retracted his statement about China crashing the funeral because she was invited. And, in fact, I did read that she had a meeting originally with Triple H. Now, later, it comes out, because of what Sean Waltman says, it really wasn't a meeting. Basically, China corners him and says, you know, I apologize for everything I've said. Let's get on friendly terms, etc. But a lot of people are taking this story, kind of analyzing this closely, because of the source is Sean Waltman. Because it's Sean Waltman, should we at least pause and maybe give China the benefit of the doubt on this one?
You know what? Until we find out further information about it, it's kind of like one of those, you know, play by the ear kind of situations, because we don't know. We don't know if it's actually what happened or not. It's just basically, right now, it's just simply a rumor. But we don't know because we weren't there. We got to hear from somebody else.
I think that's what we need, is for somebody to substantiate what he's claiming.
Right, because you can't take Sean Waltman's word for this.
And if we don't get that, then maybe you can say, maybe you can throw this out.
Exactly.
She was there. She was definitely there. You know, the one other thing that was strange, I read in one report, now, you know, I've read different things on this memorial service. I read that Vince McMahon was not there.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking because Vince wasn't there, and yet WWE was in town for an event. So I'm really surprised that Vince McMahon wasn't there for this. So that was very, very shocking.
In fact, they waited, I think, 8 or 9 days later so that a lot of the WWE talent could attend this memorial service, because you said they were just in the area. How can Vince McMahon not be there?
What day was the funeral on?
Wednesday.
Okay, so I thought if it was Tuesday, then I could say, okay, well, maybe he was doing Tough Enough or something like that. But Wednesday, I mean, Vince should have been free to have been at the funeral. So I'm not understanding why he wasn't there, but Triple H showed up.
Now, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon were there.
Yeah. I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, that really peculiar. The history of WWF, Vince McMahon, Rowdy Roddy Piper, who headlined WrestleMania 1, is a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest heels of all time, and yet Vince McMahon himself doesn't show up? Now, you know, I remember when Steve Austin would be asked about this. He said, I don't do funerals. I just can't do them. That's his deal. He just says, I don't do funerals. I can't do them. But you would think Vince McMahon would be there. I think that's very strange that he's not there.
I mean, Vince and Piper have had their ups and downs over the years. And
true.
I don't know if that plays a part into it or not, but I don't remember Vince really being at a lot of people's funerals.
What's the last thing Piper did with WWE related?
I think he did maybe a Piper's Pit segment or something.
Was he at WrestleMania this year at the Hall
of Fame?
I
think he was at Mania.
Okay.
It might have been a Piper's Pit, or it might have been a backstage segment at WrestleMania this year. It could have been a backstage segment with Daniel Bryan, I believe. So I think that was the last thing he did with him.
So as far as we know, at least in the end of his life, as far as I knew, Piper was on pretty good terms with WWE. So
well,
I mean, heck, I mean,
pretty good terms with WWE, but that don't mean you're on pretty good terms with Vince.
True. That's that is true. Well stated there. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on the GRP, pause for the cause, and we'll be back with some more great content here on the Gerwick Report podcast.
Hey, what's up out there? I'm Frank D of GRP and Gerwick.net. The official t-shirt store of Gerwick.net is up and running. It's prowrestlingtees.com/Gerwick. 4 great designs, 3 GRP t-shirts, and 1 Gerwick.net t-shirt up there right now for $19.99 plus shipping and handling. You got the Raw style GRP shirt, the Nitro style GRP shirt, and the ever popular black and white NWO style GRP t-shirt, plus the official Gerwick.net t-shirt as well. Like I said, $19.99 plus shipping and handling. You can show your support today for the GRP and Gerwick.net. They ship domestically and internationally. You can pay with your credit card, debit card, or your PayPal account. It is a win-win situation. So check it out today, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick. And thank you for your continued support of the GRP. And for the latest pro wrestling news, check out Gerwick.net.
Are you enjoying this edition of the Gerwick Report podcast?
Give me a hell yeah! I said, give me a hell yeah!
Did you know that every edition of the Gerwick Report podcast, the GRP, is archived at www.gerweck.net?
Really? Really?
Really?
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
The Gerwick Report podcast has interviewed some of the biggest stars in the wrestling business.
Hi, I'm Eric Bischoff.
This is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett.
Stevie Richards.
Former WWE superstar, Ricardo Rodriguez.
Teddy Long.
Ron Simmons, a.k.a. Baruch.
Christopher Daniels.
This is Frankie Kazarian.
The Honky Tonk Man, the greatest intercontinental heavyweight champion of all time.
Matt Hardy.
Rob Van Dam.
Paul London.
Ted DiBiase, the Billion Dollar Man. You remember me?
Terry Reynolds, and you are listening to the Gerwick Report podcast with Steve Gerwick and Frank D. I don't miss it, neither should you.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
For the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net, Gerwick.net, pro wrestling since 1997.
You can now listen to the
Gerwick Report podcast
on the free TuneIn Radio app, featuring over 100,000 real radio stations, over 4 million podcasts streaming live from every continent, offering unprecedented access to listen to anything, anywhere. TuneIn lets you listen to over 100,000 real radio stations and more than 4 million podcasts from every continent, 200,000 mobile downloads per day. Available on iPhone, iPad, Android, Android tablets, Windows 8, BlackBerry, Amazon Kindle. Available in over 200 branded products with millions of devices sold worldwide, including Samsung Smart TV, Roku, Sonos, Sony, Sony PlayStation, Amazon Echo, Panasonic Viera TV, Logitech Squeezebox. TuneIn brings streaming radio to cars, including GM, Ford, BMW, Tesla, Mercedes-Benz, Volvo, Nissan, Fiat, and more.
All right, we're back here on the GRP, and I was just talking about Vince McMahon. Peculiar that he wasn't at Roddy Piper's funeral service in Portland, Oregon. One thing I found peculiar as well, Frank, was another WWF Hall of Famer took a little bit of a pot shot, aired out his dirty laundry with a current top star in WWE. I'm talking about Hacksaw Jim Duggan, made some interesting comments about Brock Lesnar, and he basically said he was sloppy in the ring, he didn't protect people, and he actually mentioned a few other people here in this particular clip.
You know, the guy, he works, he does a lot of high-risk moves for an older man out there taking, working with Brock Lesnar is dangerous anyway, because Brock doesn't seem to care about his partner. It's easy to hurt people, though.
Correct.
If I give you my body, then you got to take care of me. Some guys don't give a darn, and Brock doesn't give a darn. He'll just throw people around. Steiners used to be like that.
I think the politically correct way to say it is they don't know their own strength.
No, they take advantage of people. They take advantage of
people. Sure.
Right.
So he's talking about that here, that Brock Lesnar doesn't protect people. Basically, you go into a wrestling match and you're giving your body to your opponent. And he mentions Brock Lesnar as one of those guys that are not safe in the ring. And he also mentioned the Steiner brothers as well, having somebody he probably worked with over the years. But I really found this odd because as far as I can remember, Frank, I don't recall Hacksaw Jim Duggan himself ever working with Brock Lesnar in the ring. So these comments just kind of came out of left field.
Yeah, I don't get it either, especially from a guy who used to come to the ring with a damn 2x4. You know, I know it's a gimmick and all, but what's not a gimmick is, I believe Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik were once pulled over for having marijuana in the car. You know, and who knows what else they were doing too. So I don't really understand where you're coming with these comments here. I mean, it's like, okay, has Brock Lesnar ever came to the ring inebriated or anything like that? Has Brock Lesnar really, hurt anybody? I haven't really heard about Brock Lesnar hurting anybody in the ring, other than what happened last year at WrestleMania with The Undertaker. That was it. But I haven't heard anything. I would think that coming to the ring high as a kite, well, that's on the borderline of maybe you end up hurting somebody. You can hurt somebody more, coming to the ring inebriated than anything that Brock Lesnar does, and that's just my opinion.
It's interesting, too, because when Steve Austin was talking about, maybe doing one more match on that recent podcast with Heyman, it was, maybe working with Brock Lesnar. And I would think if Steve Austin would ever do a final match, it'd be in the ring with somebody that would be considered very, very safe. And to me, if he doesn't think Brock Lesnar is safe, I don't think he's even going to be talking about, hey, let's do a match with Brock Lesnar. So, I mean, people have always wanted to see Steve Austin versus Goldberg. Well, I can't ever see Steve Austin working with Goldberg because we know that Goldberg is not exactly the safest guy in the ring. So if Steve Austin is at least teasing the idea that he would work with Brock Lesnar, and I agree with Frank, I really haven't heard over the course of time that Brock Lesnar is not really considered safe in the ring. I just found those comments very odd that kind of really out of nowhere, Hacksaw Jim Duggan would bring up Brock Lesnar.
Well, usually it could be a situation where Hacksaw is trying to get some steam going on himself. I mean, nobody's really talking about Hacksaw Jim Duggan. So that could be what it is. I mean, you make comments like that. You throw barbs at it. They're one of the biggest stars in the business today. It'll get people talking, obviously, because we're talking about them right now here on GRP.
That's true. And I think that's the whole point of Virgil. A lot of things he does is to get noticed.
Right. Exactly.
Say, hey, I'm over here. Lonely Virgil. Oh, actually, he said he's not lonely.
Right.
He also said he
ain't lonely. Yeah.
He's not lonely, and he's one of the greatest ring technicians of all time.
Right.
Okay, very interesting. We actually received a copy of the 1994 Kayfabe Commentaries DVD with Eric Bischoff, where they would specifically talk about 1994. And, of course, 1994 was a period where WCW had some troubles. They were trying to break away from that Southern wrestling reputation and trying to attract more advertisers. And We, of course, earlier this year, we talked to Eric Bischoff himself, and we did the interview when Frank and I were done, and we were kind of analyzing our thoughts on it. One thing we kept alluding to is that he had very selective memory, or he just didn't remember things. And when I watched this DVD that I received from Sean Oliver over at kayfabecommentaries.com, which I definitely appreciate, I definitely enjoyed watching it, even though some things really made me scratch my head. But just his selective memory, or he just can't seem to recall specific times, what was going through his mind at a certain time, or what was the thoughts going into this particular pay-per-view, or signing this talent, or reaching out to this guy. When I watched that DVD, that was the first thing I took in when I was making some notes, was memory doesn't remember a lot of things about that particular time frame. And it's sad, too, Frank, because he was the guy in charge. And if you're going to ask anybody about WCW, you obviously want to talk to Eric Bischoff. He was the guy in charge of turning WCW's fortune around, taking it away from the NWA roots, making a profit, getting away from Southern Wrestling, launching Nitro, the birth of NWO, etc. But when you analyze a lot of things he says, he just can't remember a lot of the stuff that happened in his life.
That's very unfortunate, because if you want to hear anything about WCW, I would think he would be the guy to go to as it relates to that. And yeah, it sucks that Bischoff can't remember a lot of the, you know, big details and strategic details that went into, you know, what Steve just mentioned here, as far as, you know, going, taking WCW from the Southern Wrestling to, you know, the fray of sports entertainment, taking it to the heights that he did. And on this particular timeline, 1994, Bischoff's memory is one of those of either convenience, or he just really doesn't know. He just really doesn't remember. And I think that it's both of them at the same time, really. I think it's convenient amnesia at some points when things may have not been going the way you want them to. And then it's like, oh, I remember this. Like, you can tell you anything about Hogan, but anything else, he doesn't remember jack shit. And I think that's pretty telling. He remembers what he wants to remember.
Yeah, I think that was very telling about Hogan. Certainly, Hogan's his boy. He remembers a lot of details about Hogan, but a lot of the other areas he doesn't remember too much about. Hogan, he recalls that the first time he got contacted by Hogan was that Hogan contacted him or called him on the phone at 12 midnight, which Eric would say that he didn't like receiving phone calls late in the evening. He was down for the night. He was resting. His mind's not really on business, etc. So here's Hogan, first contact with WCW. He calls him at midnight. And I don't know why. I just found that very strange that, you know, if I'm going to call somebody about doing business, I don't think my first contact's going to be at midnight. Now, maybe the circumstances are different because he's Hulk Hogan. It's WCW. Maybe WCW really needs Hogan more than Hogan needs WCW. I don't know what the situation was. But to me, Frank, the first business contact, I think I would wait for the morning. Why would Hulk Hogan call him up at midnight when, you know, some people actually go to bed earlier than midnight? So I found that very strange.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He remembers all of this stuff, remembers lots of details about Hogan's contract with WCW, but he doesn't remember the circumstances of why, you know, he let Michael Hayes go. You know, it's just little things like that.
Overall, some of the things that he said, just to kind of recap, and I don't want to give away the whole DVD. Obviously, you can check that out at kayfabecommentaries.com if you want to check out the whole DVD. But certainly, he did not like Missy Hyatt.
Right.
That's one thing that I wrote down. But he really liked Kevin Sullivan. I know some people said a lot of good things about Kevin Sullivan. Some people really didn't like him. But from Eric's perspective, he was an asset to the company and had a lot of creative ideas.
Yeah, I mean, he was known for booking heat. You know, I've heard Bischoff say that. I've heard Kevin Nash say it. You know, a lot of that stuff, a lot of people don't know, but a lot of that NWO stuff, Kevin Sullivan booked a lot of that stuff. So he was a tremendous asset to WCW, unless you were one of the radicals. But nonetheless, Bischoff put him over big in the DVD.
Yeah. And, of course, going back to Hogan, he was saying that, you know, as far as Ed Leslie, you know, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, his push was a lot at the hands of Hulk Hogan, was his call. And that's the problem when you give somebody, you know, creative controls. They can decide who they want to work with. And unfortunately, even though he knew it wouldn't work with Ed Leslie as push as a main player in WCW, he went along with it, Frank, because he basically gave Hogan that power.
Exactly. And that was a debacle. Starrcade 94. That was just crazy. That was just trash. And that whole thing with Ed Leslie, Bischoff said, you know, he knew it wasn't going to work, but Hogan had that creative control. And Bischoff also said something very interesting during that. He says that pretty much a lot of people, you know, rag on him for the Hogan creative control. But what Bischoff said was a lot of people, you know, at top level, like a Triple H or like a Steve Austin or a Rock or the Click, they all had creative control. I mean, I just recently watched the Click DVD in which they're basically talking about how they went into a room with Vince McMahon and sat down with a roster sheet of everybody on the roster, and they dictated who they wanted to work with and who they didn't want to work with. So I think Bischoff is pretty much on the money with that whole creative control thing.
Another thing he brought up I thought was interesting. From his perspective, he didn't raid WWF. We hear about that all the time in the history. In fact, go back and watch the series on the Monday Night Wars on the network. Was Ted Turner opened up the checkbook and they were just raiding WWF talent. From his perspective, he basically said that he didn't sit around thinking about, oh, who can I grab from Vince? Who can I grab from the WWF? That in the final analysis, looking back at a couple of talents, say Randy Savage came to him, and basically it was a no-brainer since Slim Jim was going to pay most of his contract. So, yeah, of course I'll take Randy Savage. And I can buy that one, Frank, to a certain degree, because we know at the end of WWF, Vince didn't want Randy Savage to wrestle anymore. He was going to a youth movement. Well, Randy Savage felt he had something left to give to the business in the ring, so that makes sense to me. But then he brought up Bobby the Brain Heenan, that he didn't go out of his way to get Bobby the Brain Heenan in WCW. I think I have to take the shovel out on that one, Frank, because as far as I can remember, Bobby Heenan basically was at home, and I believe WCW contacted him about coming to work for WCW.
Exactly. I mean, Bobby Heenan, if I remember correctly, had moved to Florida, and WCW was doing their TV tapings in Florida. I believe they were doing WCW Worldwide at Disney MGM, and they had him down there doing that. I mean, that's what I've heard from Bobby Heenan. You know, when Heenan was doing interviews, he was talking about how they, being WCW, contacted him about coming to Atlanta. He didn't contact WCW, so I don't believe Bischoff on that one.
But I thought it was interesting as well. He talked about, you know, moving the tapings, and that, you know, at that time, they would run these tapings that people would fall asleep. I thought that was interesting what he was talking about there.
Yeah, I mean, sitting in the crowd at WCW, maybe the first four or five rows had people, but the rest of it was empty. They had to turn the lights all the way down to hide the fact that nobody was there. And if you're looking at the WCW product back in the day, I can see why people were falling asleep. I mean, I've been watching some of those old Monday Night Raws lately on the network, and I'm falling asleep watching those. So I can only imagine how I was at, you know, WCW. And he also talked about Steve moving the product away from center stage. Moved it to Disney, and how that benefited, you know, WCW. They, you know, fresh audience in there, you know, every other hour. They can tape, you know, weeks and weeks of television and have it in the can, and didn't have to really deal with center stage. I think he felt that center stage was really a piece of crap building. That's pretty much what I got from it.
How do people not fall asleep watching WWE today?
Oh, trust me, I do all the time. That's why I really kind of don't want to watch it. I don't watch it. I only check out maybe the Divas matches, and that's pretty much it. You know, and I'll check out, you know, the Johnson Open Challenge, but you cannot watch Raw without falling asleep.
Definitely. In fact, I take a little side note. I actually started watching Raw this week, Frank. I hadn't watched in a few weeks, and I threw it on the Hulu because on mine, you know, I get the 90-minute condensed version of the show, and here's Seth Rollins talking and talking and talking and dissing John Cena, and they have the little graphic of John Cena's face, and they have somebody's mouth talking for him, and, you know, cutting himself down and all this. And it was the same promo I've seen so many times on Raw, where the heel champion comes out, shoots a promo on the babyface challenger who he's going to face at the pay-per-view. Not going to wrestle tonight. You know, I'm taking the night off. And here out comes three challengers, Cesaro, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens. And then the heel authority figure comes out and says, let's put them all in the ring together. Frank, I could have wrote that opening particular promo in about 10 seconds.
Well, we all could have, Steve. I mean, we've been seeing the same damn thing for 20 years.
Yeah. Where is the innovative ideas of, I'm talking about WWE, aren't I? What am I talking about? We're in this, as you said, this PG boring era.
Right.
Is what we're going to get. But another thing I want to note on the Bischoff DVD, they actually asked him about the Hall of Fame, which I thought was interesting. The WCW Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I remember that.
He felt WCW was only really around for a short period of time because he didn't really want to include the NWA history because they were a separate company. So what is the point of having a Hall of Fame for WCW that's only been around for 7 years? And that kind of really made me think of what TNA, because wasn't about 7 years after TNA had run, they decided to have their own Hall of Fame. So in some ways, it's kind of a backhanded slam against TNA.
I think that it is a backhanded slam against TNA, and you know, Bischoff really just did not want to be associated with the NWA for some reason. He just didn't want to have anything to do with that. And that's a lot of where him and Flair's issue started in WCW, was just the fact that Bischoff stated that, you know, Flair represented the old NWA, you know, Crockett era of WCW, while Hall and Nash, you know, represented the new things he was trying to do at WCW. So I can see it definitely right there. I mean, he felt the WCW Hall of Fame was just a waste of time.
I'm not sure he really understands the history of the NWA, and that may have been the reason he decided to go in a totally different direction.
That could be, but I don't really think he cared.
No. I mean, he was a wrestling fan. He came from the AWA in Minneapolis, which would have known Vern Gagne's promotion, but I don't really think, if you look back at Bischoff's run, that he really understood, was a big fan of the NWA, and so certainly when he gets to WCW and he's trying to distance himself from the Southern wrestling stuff, that he just says, let's just scrap it all.
Right, and that's pretty much what he did. I mean, it just to me, it just felt like he had no respect for it, and that's just how it comes across.
I guess it's really not much different than what ECW did, right?
Right. They had no respect for the NWA either. I mean, if you had respect for it, then the belt would never have been thrown down by Shane Douglas. It was done for shock value, but it was also, if you're, you know, any of the NWA guys, anybody who was on the board, it was a disrespectful act. And it's kind of like the same thing with TNA. Remember, TNA was NWA TNA. And then they got away from the NWA. Same thing.
To me, when Shane Douglas did it, NWA was dead.
Oh, NWA had been dead for, what, 7 years at that point?
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I mean, Bischoff had the last chance of trying to preserve NWA, and he just didn't want to do it. And I think part of it was he didn't understand the full roots of the history of the NWA.
Well,
which
I think that's true. He didn't understand the full roots of the history of NWA, but also he felt that was just so passe. You know, he's trying to attract, you know, as he said, national advertisers to WCW, and NWA just wasn't doing it.
It was funny too. Was he actually was asked about independent contractor status?
Right, right.
And something we've talked about so many times on this podcast, he didn't really have an answer either. And I still to this day have no idea how they get away with that.
I don't either. And Bischoff, you know, he was taking, you know, practice in that when he was running WCW. He don't even know.
So I guess in the final analysis, Frank, you know, I've seen a lot of kayfabe commentaries, DVDs. We've been sent some over the years. I've had a long relationship with Sean Oliver at Kayfabe Commentaries. He's been advertising on Gerwick.net for years. A great guy. Interviewed him at Gerwick.net. In fact, we'd love to have him here on the GRP. Pick his brain about some of the great projects that he's done, the guest booker, the timelines, breaking kayfabe, the U-shoots. Go back to the territories, etc. So if you want to check out some of those titles, go to kayfabecommentaries.com. But as far as this disc itself, Frank, I don't think either one of us would recommend it necessarily. But what are some of your favorite kayfabe commentary titles?
Well, personally, I liked the U shoot with the Honky Tonk Man. That was funny. I mean, Sean Oliver, really, when he came up with the idea for the U shoot, I mean, he really changed the way that we saw the shoot interview. And I really enjoy the U-Shoot series. I think that the one he did with Teddy Long was good. I like the one he did with, like I said, Honky Tonk Man. I did not like the one he did with Jamie Dundee. I thought that was, like, it was so uncomfortable watching it, because Jamie Dundee was really high out of his mind on some real bad shit. So that one was not fun. It was not entertaining at all to watch that one. I also enjoyed the Timeline 1997 with Jim Cornette. That one was good. And anything that he's done with New Jack, I really liked it.
I think the Jim Cornette one is the polar opposite, because Jim Cornette has a great memory of what he did in this business, and I think he takes notes. So, you know, to look back at basically Bischoff is trying to really pick his brain and remember things, Jim Cornette is the opposite, where he remembers everything.
Right. He has everything wrote down. I mean, he even in some of the scenes, he has a booking, you know, sheet there of what they were doing and what day and what this house drew and the ratings and all that. I mean, very, very detailed.
Yep. So if you're interested in a Kayfabe Commentaries title, definitely check out kayfabecommentaries.com for more information. You know, a strange story this week, Frank. Apparently, I don't know if we should be surprised by this, because we've known some of the antics of Kevin Dunn, but apparently Kevin Dunn is not a big fan of Kevin Owens, and I've talked a lot about Kevin Owens on this podcast. I think he's a breath of fresh air. I was a big fan of his work in Ring of Honor as Kevin Steen, ROH champion. And I'm really glad that he's gotten onto the main roster very quickly in WWE. But apparently there's something going on with Kevin Dunn, who works behind the scene with production at WWE. He's obviously a big shot. He's very tight with Vince McMahon. He's got stock options, etc. But they had Randy Orton on Raw this week, and I actually did see it because I happened to watch that particular segment where Orton made a fat joke or basically alluded that Kevin Owens was gaining weight. And it seems to me, Frank, that there is a bit of a sabotage going on within WWE. It's asinine to think of this way, but apparently Kevin Dunn is not big on Kevin Owens and apparently not big fan of some of the guys coming up from NXT. So it looks like, at least in the case of Kevin Owens, that there's a little bit of sabotage going on with him and his future in WWE.
Yeah, isn't that really stupid, though? Because I would think that if we're WWE, we'd all be on the same page, on the same team, trying to create the next big superstar that's going to carry the business for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And yet they're sabotaging this guy for what? I mean, sabotaging because what Kevin Dunn feels that his job is threatened, feels that Stephanie and Triple H, once they take control, they're going to fire his beaver, Bucky-looking ass. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So that's the reason why, you know, he has a problem with Kevin Owens and a lot of the other call-ups, because as long as he can sabotage these guys, make them look bad, that makes Triple H look bad. That makes Stephanie look bad. So he's going to do anything he can to keep his job. I mean, honestly, Steve, I mean, what does Kevin Dunn bring to the table other than, you know, burying his face in Vince McMahon's ass? That's it. I mean,
good old Bucky.
Good old Bucky. That's right. I mean, look at Monday Night Raw. The past 15, 20 years, Monday Night Raw has looked the same. Same Titantron. Same. Just the way the show looks is just the same stale shit. Every single month, it's the same set for the pay-per-views. There's nothing that stands out anymore, other than maybe WrestleMania. And I have to admit, that stage sucked this year too. But there's just nothing about the show. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, what is the justification of this guy being employed? Period. I mean, what exactly is it that he does, other than kiss McMahon's ass, tries to keep these guys down? And it's like, okay, if he's doing that to Kevin Owens, as hot as a heel Kevin Owens is, probably the hottest heel they have in the company, what's he going to do when Samoa Joe comes up? What's he going to do when Finn Balor comes up, or anybody else?
I agree. And in fact, I really think when you see the call-up of Samoa Joe and Finn Balor and Kenta and some of the other guys they have on that roster, if they don't make these guys seem special, like a big deal, them coming in, they're not going to be special. I really don't think Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch really seem that special to me either, because they just kind of groove them together. They're in the storyline with the other divas. To me, when you have a big call-up, or you're trying to introduce new characters, make them seem special. I mean, go back to the days of the old vignettes, when somebody came on the scene that you were going to push, like a Million Dollar Man or Val Venus or somebody like that. I mean, you had these great vignettes, Mr. Perfect's vignettes. And I know maybe that's passe, Frank. Maybe that's too 90-ish or whatever. But to me, when they would come on the scene, they would seem something special. If Samoa Joe and Finn Balor, who are very special talents, Kenta as well, if they don't get that kind of rub, that notoriety, they're just going to come on the scene and flop too. And I hope that's not the case, because I like all three of those guys, and I really like Kevin Owens as well. But I don't know. This is just the mentality, I guess, within WWE right now.
Exactly. The mentality is to let's bury all these guys so I can keep my job, instead of us, you know, make new stars, make the company more profitable, and let's actually, you know, put on an exciting product for the fans. They all have personal agendas, and that's just, I don't like that. I mean, it's obviously political that's going on here, and it sucks for guys like Kevin Owens and guys like, you know, Finn Balor and Samoa Joe and all the rest of these guys that are coming up. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that feel that Finn Balor, Steve, is really overrated. So that's all that is. It's all politics.
Politics and wrestling, go figure.
Exactly. Yeah, who would have thought, right?
Yeah. A couple of poll results we have at Gerwick.net. We talked about the Virgil poll. 74% say no for the Hall of Fame. We ran the poll, and we talked about this a little bit with SummerSlam. I guess I initially thought when they booked Lesnar versus Undertaker, that Lesnar would go over, but the fans are actually thinking that The Undertaker gets revenge here. The Undertaker 70% to 30%. How do you think they're going to book this match?
I think they're going to book it with some type of interference from the outside. Either be Kane or a long shot, it'd be Sting. I'm more along the lines of looking maybe it's going to be Kane, and that's where they're going with it. I don't see a clear-cut winner here.
So Kane versus Undertaker for the future?
I don't think so. I think they're going to get rid of Lesnar. This will take Lesnar off TV for a couple months as well.
Because, I mean, really, for Undertaker, I mean, after this match, he disappears too, doesn't he?
You would think so.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know, because the thing about it is they're both part-timers. And Undertaker's not even that. So it's kind of really hard to see where they're going with this. But I'm thinking some kind of interference.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. We also ran the poll. This is a poll that actually Frank suggested, with John Cena giving the United States Championship more credibility. At this point, is the United States Championship more prestigious than the WWE Championship? Now, 74% said no, Frank, but I know, you know, in talking to you about the situation with Cena and the championship, he's really elevated that championship.
I think that John has done an incredible job elevating the United States Championship. The U.S. Championship was getting more time on the show than the WWE Championship. So what do you, I mean, go figure, right? I mean, if the WWE Championship was on the same level as the U.S. Championship, then they would both be treated equally. I think that Cena, you know, is a guy that's been going out there having, you know, a lot of kick-ass matches and having an open challenge every single week, you know, while it's just basically promo after promo with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I tend to agree at this point. I like Seth Rollins, but I just don't think this is the time for him to be the champion right now. But then again, who is in that company?
It's definitely not Randy Orton.
I mean, you've already had Cena so many times. I mean, who do you give the championship? Who deserves the WWE Championship right now? And who can give it some credibility right now?
I don't know, but I don't really think that Rollins has done that.
I don't either.
I
like the guy.
I like Rollins too, but just being telling the truth, telling him like it is that we do here on GRP, I just don't see him as the guy.
No, I don't either. I really don't, unfortunately. And I really loved Tyler Black and ROH, but him being the world champion, maybe that's what would be an argument against Kevin Owens maybe eventually climb the ladder, is that he's just a Ring of Honor guy.
Right.
Well, then again, you know, Daniel Bryan did fairly well on top.
Yeah,
so.
But it wasn't designed for him to be doing well at all.
No,
yeah.
Of course not.
That was simply because the fans got behind Daniel Bryan. So they weren't, you know, that's what that was.
So if you like Kevin Owens and you want to see him go somewhere, go to the arenas and cheer your heads off for Kevin Owens.
That's pretty much how you can do it, because if not, then they're going to push, you know, like a Roman Reigns down your throat is what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Or the Ticketmaster, Dean Ambrose. You know, which me, personally, I don't see the big deal about Dean Ambrose. I don't really see that. And they call him the Ticketmaster. I got a question out there for all the fellas that listen to the show. What makes Dean Ambrose the Ticketmaster? I'm just kind of curious about that. Because I've seen Renee Young, and she really ain't got no titties. So what makes him the Ticketmaster?
I don't know. You tell me this, that they're calling him that. I'm thinking, what's it in reference to? Because they don't push the puppies on WWE anymore.
Exactly. So I don't know unless this was something that happened on the Indies or something. I don't know why they call him the Ticketmaster. I don't really get that.
In fact, really, none of the divas are really well endowed there much anymore. Not like when it was, you know, Deborah back in the day and Tori Wilson and some of the girls they used to have.
Right.
You know, that were a little more well endowed. Sable back in the day. I don't know. That's a strange one.
But we have a situation nowadays where, you know, there are a lot of guys out there who thinks that Paige is attractive. So it is what it is.
And we're going to talk about the divas here in just 1 second, but I also want to get to another poll result. Your favorite Roddy Piper WrestleMania match. I think I know what Frank's going to say.
Mine was Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper for the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania 8. That was my favorite one.
You were definitely in the majority here. 54% said that match at WrestleMania 8. What do you think second place would be?
Probably the match he had with Hogan at WrestleMania 1, the tag team match.
Yeah, that one actually came in third place. The second place match was Piper versus Goldust.
Oh, I forgot about that. The Hollywood Backlash. Yeah, that was damn good. That was damn good for his time.
Yep, WrestleMania 12. So yeah. Definitely appreciate everybody voting on the polls. And speaking of polls, Frank, we have started the Hot 100 tournament for 2015. A little history there. 2012, we launched the Hot 100. The very first Hot 100 list was compiled by yours truly, the dictator, the webmaster of Gerwick.net. And I put Brooke Tessemacher as number one for 2012. And then 2013, I said, all right. Now everybody agrees with me. Everybody's tastes a little bit different, right? Everybody's got a little different flavor. Well, let's do tournament style. And in 2013, Mickey James won. And we're talking about active divas, not all-time divas. So 2014, I changed the rules and made it the all-time divas Hot 100, where you had people no longer active, like Tori Wilson and Stacey Keibler, etc. And, Frank... Boy, Mickey James won in 2014 as well. So coming into 2015, she is a two-time defending Hot 100 champion. Can she three-peat, Frank?
I think it's a good possibility that Mickey James will three-peat. We shall see what happens with this. I mean, it's going to come down to, I think, her and maybe Lisa Marie Veyron. But we shall see. But I think, basically, if I had to put my money on it, Mickey James probably going to three-peat this tournament.
Just throw a couple names out, Frank. Who do you consider some of the hotter divas as we talk about this particular 2015 tournament? And this time we're talking just active in the business and just pure looks. Who are some of the top hot divas out there in 2015?
I think Brooke Tessemacher is pretty good. I think she looks good. Yeah, Sasha Banks, she's hot. I got to say, though, man, it's not really many. You know, it ain't really many out there. So I'm gonna stick with what I said.
Yeah, a lot of people like Lana right now. She's getting a little bit of a rub.
Yeah, she's all right. I mean, she's better than that Summer Rae, I'll tell you that much.
And then, of course, the one I think is very underrated that doesn't get a lot of attention because they don't really do much with her is Alicia Fox. I think she's very pretty as well.
Oh, Alicia Fox, yeah, she's pretty good.
Yeah. So the poll is currently running. Actually, not the poll. The polls themselves are running. You vote. We have different matches. The Hot 100 starts with one-on-one, three-ways, and four-ways. It's the only way I could do getting 100 girls into a tournament bracket, like the old 64 for the basketball tournament. So after the first round, we have many eliminations. Second round, we go to 32, a more traditional bracket there. And then we just go until there's only one left. So Mickey James, I think, is the odds-on favorite, but it's a very open field. You can definitely check out the list at Gerwick.net. In fact, if you look at the polls themselves, there's a link to the Hot 100 page. You can see the entire roster. I see a lot of those divas out there. They're on the list, and they're retweeting, Frank. They're on Facebook, and they're making note that they're on this Hot 100 list. So they're encouraging their fans out there to support them when their name comes up on the poll. So it should be very interesting to see how it plays out.
Absolutely. And if you want to show your support to the GRP and Gerwick.net, there's two ways you can do that. You can go to ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick today. We have 7 great designs up right now. $20 plus shipping and handling will get you one of our official T-shirts. So check it out today, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick. They ship domestically and internationally. Check it out today. Also, audibletrial.com/Gerwick.net is the place to go to get a free audiobook today. They got the Daniel Bryan book up there right now. A lot of people out there like Daniel Bryan. Yes, yes, yes. Well, yes, you're way over right now to audibletrial.com/Gerwick.net. Get a free audiobook. You get to keep the book even if you don't keep the service. So check it out today. And when you do those two things, you help support the GRP and Gerwick.net. And if you can't make a financial contribution today to the show, just simply spread the word about the show. Tell people that you listen to the GRP with Steve Gerwick and Frank D. Tell people about Gerwick.net and spread the word about what we do here.
Absolutely. And if you do buy a T-shirt, send us a picture. We'll put it on the Facebook page.
Absolutely. We do that.
Yeah, we'll put it right out there. So, yeah, definitely. If you can support us, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick is our store. As Frank said, 7 great designs, probably more in the future as well. So, would definitely appreciate your support today as well. And a couple more quick notes here, Frank. Did you know they changed the gimmick and the name of Mr. Maddox?
Yeah, I am aware of that, and I don't really think it matters. You know something? The guy never really meant anything to the company to begin with. He means as much as Wade Barrett right now. So I don't think it matters. I mean, you can change the damn guy's name to Vince Kingsley, and nobody would give a damn. I mean, who gives a shit about Brad Maddox or Joshua Kingsley? I don't really care, Steve.
I'm just surprised he's still on the roster.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's like, how many chances do you give to a guy that's never going to get over? He's never going to get over. He's never going to be anything. So just let the guy go. Trim the fat. Bring up somebody who's actually going to get over. You know, they're wasting their time with this guy, yet a guy like Samoa Joe stays down in NXT.
Yeah. I don't know. The guy's had so many chances and, you know, changing his name, changing his look. I just don't think he's the guy right now. And, yeah, as you said, so many great talents out at NXT. I don't lobby for people to get fired, but you've had the guy for how long now, and he's just not getting over. So, you
right.
know, at some point you just have to say, you know, future endeavored. And move on to somebody else. There's so many up-and-coming stars they have that, I don't know, can't believe he's still around. It's pretty
right.
amazing.
It is amazing.
You know, another thing that's amazing, Frank, is how's this Global Force Wrestling TNA invasion going?
So far, it's pretty much, if you are into the spoilers, then you would know that it's done. It's a wrap. I mean, it's just starting out on television, but it's pretty much done. I guess they, you know, him, Jeff Jarrett and John Gaborik really weren't getting along too well with the way the thing was going to be booked and who was going to go over. So they pretty much wrapped that shit up, and I guess it's done.
Wow. And, you know, honestly, you basically have a dying brand versus a brand that nobody essentially knows anything about.
Right.
I don't see on paper, really, how this was going to work. I mean, this is not like WCW invading WWF.
Right.
Or NWO invading WCW. How did they really think this was going to work?
I don't know. I mean, it's basically you have the dad brand being invaded by a brand that nobody gives a shit about.
And I mean, it's smart for Jeff Jarrett
to get
a
Jeff
little
Jarrett.
Bit of note. Yeah,
yeah.
It's smart for him.
Because we still don't know what's going to happen in October. Or, excuse me, we still don't know what's going to happen in September with Destination America and TNA. So it's good to get it over with now. Because you don't really know what's going to happen past September. We don't know if TNA is even going to be a thing anymore on Destination America. And Global Force right now doesn't even have a TV deal.
That's it. I mean, it's August. It's what, mid-August?
Right.
I haven't heard anything about Global Force getting a television deal.
Right.
They had this set of tapings. Well, what are they going to do with these tapes?
Yeah. I don't know. That's for them to figure that out. Because I know what I do with them, and they go right on the network.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I know you and Atlee were talking about, I think it was on the Raw deal, about, you know, Ring of Honor losing its 8 o'clock time slot and pros and cons. I don't really think there's a lot of pros there. I think they, you know, they put it at 8 o'clock. It wasn't getting the type of reaction they wanted, the viewership. And I don't know, Frank, do you see at some point they pull Ring of Honor and throw Global Force on there?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I mean, Ring of Honor is an okay show, but they got to do something. What they're doing right now, to me, I mean, I watch it every week, but I just see so many issues there as far as the storylines. They're really, like, non-existent. It's just basically just matches. And the fact that the show is syndicated elsewhere and then brought on Destination America, I think that hurts them. I think it maybe if they did two tapings, if they taped the syndicated show and then did a lot of the bigger stuff for the Destination America show, I think that would be more successful way to go.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see September. I guess we're hearing that this is going to be it in September. The TNA is going to lose its television deal, and then I don't know, Frank. Are they going to find another partner for TNA, or is this pretty much it?
I don't know, Steve. I don't know. I'm not Nostradamus. So, you know, I don't know what to say about it. I don't know. I don't know what they're gonna do.
You're Frank D. Namas.
Exactly.
Your crystal ball.
Well, the crystal balls of you know, Frank D. is telling them that you know, I don't know. You know, Destination America, you know, could keep TNA, or they could drop them just like that. I mean, it's gonna be up to TNA. TNA hasn't really, you know, denied the story. Destination America hasn't said anything about it publicly. So nobody knows right now.
Well, as far as I know, the fall schedule's out and they're not on it. So,
well, there you go.
Well, I mean, as you said, they haven't refuted Dave Meltzer, and Dave Meltzer's stayed by his story, and it looks like it's going to be true. So we'll see what happens for TNA. You've been calling them the dead brand.
Exactly.
I guess we need a dead brand T-shirt, right?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't root for anybody to go out of business, but, you know, if you do an invasion angle, and most of the guys have switched brands anyways through, you know, switching sides with contracts, I mean, what is there to invade at this point? I mean, all the stars are in Global Force Wrestling now. So, it's a sad situation with TNA, unfortunately. But, they still got Bob Carter, so as long as he keeps pumping money in the company, who knows, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, if he's willing to send money down the toilet, then it may survive at some point in some form. I don't know. Do you ever see a situation where they just put the TV shows on their website and say, watch us on TV? Because, I mean, they have a number of shows scheduled for TV tapings in the future.
Right. I mean, I don't know.
I know they don't make any money that way other than maybe selling advertisement for it, but at least it would keep them afloat for at least a dark period.
I mean, there's always Netflix, there's always Hulu, there's always them maybe trying to relaunch their own on-demand service again. Don't know.
So, yeah, looking bleak. But that's going to be our GRP for today. We always appreciate you listening to the podcast. As Frank said, if you enjoy this podcast and can't shell out some money for a T-shirt or an Audible trial, definitely spread the word about the GRP. That's how we're going to grow. Let everybody know on Twitter and Facebook you listen to the podcast. Let your friends know out there that are still wrestling fans. Because it seems like it's dwindling down. Oh, I used to watch wrestling, but I don't watch anymore. But in fact, we would probably be a good podcast for those disgruntled fans out there, Frank.
Yeah, because we don't try to come on here and shit on everything. It's just it's hard not to shit on everybody.
Right.
It sucks.
I mean, hey, we said we like Kevin Owens.
Exactly.
We like Samoa Joe.
Exactly.
You like Finn Balor, you love Sasha Banks, so, I mean, we do say positive things, it's just right now, you can't really polish a turd.
No, you can't.
And that's what wrestling is right now, unfortunately, to a larger degree. I mean, there is some good wrestling out there, don't get me wrong. In fact, I'd really suggest if you're really disgruntled, go to independent wrestling. That's the backbone. It's usually a pretty cheap ticket to get in. You'll see stars of tomorrow. In fact, sometimes you see even stars that have no longer on WWE or TNA or Ring of Honor, but you can definitely check out those shows. And that's really the backbone of this industry. They're still pumping strong on independents out there. And you never know. You might see the guy tomorrow who'll be the next John Cena. So definitely support independent wrestling. Support us at gerwick.net, www.gerweck.net. All our podcasts are there. The archives list is in full there. We got 2015 podcast, got 2014 podcast. All the interviews we've done, including the much talked about Virgil interview, is there. Definitely check us out there. We're on Stitcher, we're on iTunes, and we're on TuneIn. So definitely check us out. And thank you for the support you've shown to the Gerwick Report podcast.
If you enjoyed today's Gerwick Report podcast, we encourage you to go to gerwick.net at www.gerweck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. You can also find all the archives of previous editions of the Gerwick Report podcast there. Additionally, check out our Facebook discussion group. We're on Twitter at Gerwick Report. You can follow us on YouTube, our YouTube channel at Gerwick Report on YouTube. Find us on Stitcher, on TuneIn. Check us out on Instagram. We appreciate your support here at Gerwick.net and the Gerwick Report podcast. Again, check out all your wrestling news at Gerwick.net and stay tuned for the next edition of the Gerwick Report podcast.